The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
As we step into our conversation for our book club feature today, would love to welcome Mr. Issa Wendt to Freedom 106.5 FM. Good morning and welcome. He is a self-employed author working in education and training. He's a self-published fiction writer based in Barbados, and he's also a coach. So we'll talk a little bit about his new book, Valadir. I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. Am I, Mr. Wendt?
You're getting close to both names, and it's Issa.
Issa.
Yes, Issa. And it's called Valadir.
Valadir. You see, when we have unusual names, we sort of kind of feel it out a little bit. My own is Tusco. So I get you.
Totally okay. And it's part of it. I grew up. You know?
Yeah, I know.
My name for people, you know, people do tend to insist that it's Issa, which is an Arabic pronunciation.
And then there's the insecure girl, Issa, what's her last name? The actress. Oh, you don't know? Okay, don't worry.
I'm not familiar.
I'm sure if I show you the picture of the girl, you'll know who I'm speaking of.
Sure.
Yeah.
I definitely love to. Love to see her.
No problem. So,
and yes, it's called Valadir. The book is Valadir. Yeah.
Valadir. And what's the meaning of the word Valadir?
Valadir is a made-up word that I did create for the people. They are human. You can think of any other label or symbolic name that was given to a people, like Roman, something like Atlantean. You know, this kind of thing. A name of a people. So that's the name that they were given during the histories of what was called the wars of attrition in the book, in the histories of the book.
I immediately thought of Wakanda. I don't know why, but immediately thought of that. So it is a science.
Yeah, a lot of people think of Wakanda 300. Obviously, I'm very inspired by these things and try to keep the story as original as possible. But you do expect certain tropes to fall in there, and that they're there, you know, swords, you know, horses.
So,
and, you know, what we would call magic. But the magic is a totally original creation that I came up with over a long period of time.
Well, I am going to ask about this period of time, this process, because for you to come up with a name for a people means that you put a lot of thought into what they would look like, what they do, what the environment looks like. How and what inspired you to build that reality?
Wow, precisely. A lot of people ask that question, and I was quite young, and the inspiration came from a moment of someone asking to tell a story. And it was a group of friends, and I decided, because nobody was about to tell a story, to wing it. I don't know why. You know, maybe I liked movies, maybe I liked stories, maybe I liked writing. And I just had an idea in my head, and I started to just spin it. And basically, at the end of it, this young lady that was there, she said, hey, you know, you should like write that as a story. And I was like, you know what? I'll put my, you know, money where my mouth is and try it out. And I wrote it down, and it was a quick, compelling story. But of course, world building is totally different, and actually learning how to write a story is a totally different ball game. And if you want to do it correctly, you have to kind of learn a lot of things, and that's kind of what I had to do, is learn. And it was a process of, you know, a lot of lashes from editors, I guess. And developing a rich balance of storyline and world building and character development. And it continued to flesh out and flesh out and flesh out. And over the years, I was able to, I would say maybe over maybe 5 or 6 years, I was able to flesh out a pretty good story. And when I reread it and edited it, I was not happy with it. So I decided on a rewrite, which started on a total new journey of learning and world development. And thus came about all the technology in the world and the magic, what we would call magic. I don't call it magic. Technology, any technology that is, you know, advanced and sufficiently advanced, it will be perceived as magic to any human being. And so I looked at that aspect and that angle of a human being, a human civilization, not with orcs and elves and, you know, well, that is cool, that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I totally took it straight out of the rewrite,
mm-hmm,
and went very human with it. And I was very happy with the results of the human side of the story and the characters. And then the technology started to come in, and a lot of, because the world is Andy Baladar is a military force, right? That's why I tried to make people think of Romans, you know, how, mm-hmm, they were able to conquer a massive part of the world, and were able to influence the world, and how we even now live is influenced by the Romans, you know.
No,
we use Roman numerals still.
Yeah, we do. And some of these children can't read clocks because they're still in Roman numerals. So they have, you know, a little difficulty. Now, just reading a brief on your book, it said that ancient rulers of Earth, whose legacy of absolute power continues to affect their world and bleeds into ours. Is it a, sure, can I say like a premonition of what the Earth could look like in the future? Based on what you're talking about, developing the storylines and the environment and so on, does that,
yeah,
is that one of the messages you want to get out there?
Sure, that could compute, yes. Mm-hmm. Well, the Valadar is meant to be enjoyed, you know, and it was never meant to be prophetic or, you know, a premonition of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
Many people believe that fiction, it stays in fiction while it can bleed into reality. You know, take many creations in fiction, science fiction movies, people tend to start to build these things, you know, like we were watching in Star Trek these flat screens, you know,
mm-hmm,
and now we use them, you know. So this was something I would love to see, you know, mm-hmm, things from the Valadar world coming out into the real world is a magnificent vision, and I totally support that.
Strange enough, you would say that. I'm thinking of the cartoon The Jetsons, you know, that was written,
right,
and then like the technology you just mentioned, the flat screens and cell, mm-hmm, phones and gadgets that move,
correct,
about itself. You know, I'm thinking about the little cleaner robot things, you know, the No, I'm going to say Swiffer, but you know what I'm talking about. All of these things come from imagination and then into the real world.
The Roomba,
there we go. You know, so I would think that writers have a very big part in at least stimulating the imagination of those to see if they can create the actual thing and bring it into reality. So we have to thank you all writers for that. It gives us possibilities to think about. Now, your target.
Thank you as well. I thank you as well for having me on the show. Of course, talking to Trinidad. Hello, Trinidad. I was actually born there in Trinidad.
Mm-hmm.
Came over to Barbados when I was a very young baby, swaddling. You know.
so you're Trinibajan.
Birth home.
Yeah.
Yes, they call me a Trinibaj here. Yes, that's what they call us.
The thing is, you said that your target audience is 17 to 22. Is there a particular reason why you chose that age bracket?
Well, I guess since the book is so new, so much information has been passed out, and 17 to 22, I think, is an incorrect interpretation. I think we can go a lot younger. Some people say 10 and up, because it's written with, you know, all respect to young readers and parents, especially, not to have any, you know, as your show was talking about, you know, parents are very concerned about what, you know, their children are exposed to.
Mm-hmm.
And I did take that into context while writing the book,
mm-hmm,
that if young children were to pick it up, they would not be coming across any explicit content at all. You know, of course, it is a fantasy novel, and you would expect some form of violence. But I do not, you know, I don't celebrate the violence. I always try to write violence in a poetic manner, so it can be enjoyed and not, you know, make you feel, you know, in any way like, oh, I don't need to read that. You know, so certainly you can skip out certain parts if you were to read it to your children. But I do believe that with parental guidance, young readers can enjoy the book. Yes.
I mean, yes. No disrespect to your journey. I can think of a few books that have been through the same rigors of analysis. Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, the Twilight saga that seemed to be sagaring still, you know, going. And the young adults read these books and became adults and still understand the difference between it is just a book and what is reality. And sometimes, I think we should give the kids a little more credit. In that they,
I believe that too.
Yeah, they would be able
give
to
give the kids some credit.
Yeah,
and if we can teach them right from wrong early enough, they can make credible decisions and decisions that can surprise, you know, even the oldest and wisest.
And for all you know,
so as the good book says, you know, wisdom comes from the mouth of babes, right?
That's right. And Valadaya, you just might see Disney taking on to do a whole, you know, park, because some of these books have turned into feature theme parks, you know?
I will take that, you know. I believe in not limiting yourself and aim for the stars, not the moon. You might actually hit it, you know?
How has Bajan life influenced your work? Do you see a lot of references to how you grew up and the Caribbean environment in your book?
Of course, of course. I would definitely say Barbados has influenced me greatly. There's much love here in Barbados. Bajans are loving people. Of course, in the last 5 years, 6 years of the whole earth, we've gone through a lot, and I think everybody is healing, going through a process of understanding themselves, you know. I personally did a lot of growth during that time, and Barbados is always home for me because I grew up here. I know Barbados, you know, to the bone, you know. And while I do have Trinidadian blood and Trinidadian upbringing, I think that did also change my way of looking at Barbados. You know, I tend to look at Barbados as a very great place to start. Whether or not you want to live here or not, it's a brilliant place to start. It has a lot of infrastructure, but you do have to be realistic and you have to have an international mind. And I definitely was brought up with that through my father and mother and family, who a lot of them live obviously in Trinidad and overseas, abroad, over all of the world. And some of my close family would be living in the States, you know, my brothers and sisters. And so I don't limit myself to just thinking in a Barbadian manner. I believe the Caribbean should be one. That is a different kettle of fish. I will leave exactly right there.
Listen, that could be a whole topic for another hour or so. And I mean, you're tempting me because as a writer, you know, and looking at that very same topic of how we integrate with each other in the Caribbean, especially now at this point in time, you know, how does as you're a writer, how do you feel about it? Do you think we're on the right track or no?
I think that in Barbados, in the Caribbean, we would be stronger together rather than separated. And if any nation is looking at that equation right now, they are actually at their largest from whoever it is. You know, I wouldn't call a single name right now. I don't think it's my place to say it. But whoever it is looking to extend their reach, right? And I think each Caribbean leader should look at one another as brothers and sisters mm-hmm. in the same equation, and we can, you know, make a much stronger proposition to the world if we come together, I think. Yeah.
And I think within your book, you send that as a theme as well for persons to come together. Yeah?
Yeah. Yes, that we are always stronger together. And if you would like to take it back to the histories of the Valadare, that is what changed their world dramatically, is their ability to use their so-called magic. It's mm-hmm. The energy stream, which is the life of the universe, the energy that everybody can tap in that wakes us up in the morning, you know? And they're able, obviously, because this is fiction, and you want to make it cool. Mm-hmm. But you also want to make it in a way that you can believe, you know, and that's what I spent a long time trying to do. And a long story short, they were able to come together, and in this specific area that they've constructed, they can join their energy together and cast a thought into mm-hmm. the reality and change it. But you know, every action has an equal and opposite reaction. Mm-hmm. in the universe, right? And mm-hmm. that's what happens, is consequence just hit them, you know, after they did that. Obviously, it was a very, you know, serious situation. They're at war with dragons, you know, which one is a cool trope. We want to think about how they're going to defeat a dragon. You know, these mm-hmm. things are flying, they can't fly. So they decided, because the Valadare do not actually want to kill. That's a part of the Valadare. They have to have a heart that is very similar to, let's say, a police officer or someone in the army. They're not supposed to be bloodthirsty. They're supposed to be the opposite of that, but able to match that person that will be willing to go there, you know, to take out the murderer, to take out the person that's willing to stop civilization. You still have to go there mm-hmm. and meet them equally. And that is what a Valadare is about. And so they decided to meet the dragons on an equal playing field and remove the flight. Mm. But by doing that, you know, massive consequences were
seen
to the actual reverse. And the world at that point in time, I theorize, had two moons, which is kind of, you know, we theorize that the Earth did have two moons at one mm-hmm. point in time, and the first moon did either consume it, right, or it was absorbed, or they collided, and that's how we have one moon today.
Hmm. But so you like
I
to
write that.
Well, I'm getting that you like to do the research on the, is it metaphysics? Cosmic
sure.
spaces.
That's a good word for it. Yeah,
yeah. And the Big Bang theory, and bring it into your books. So it's almost like an exploration of how did we get here? How do we continue to exist? Yeah. You know, existential Precisely. Crisis. Would it be that?
I would say that during developing it, mm-hmm. you know, certain existential crises may occur. Mm-hmm. You have to question your own reality in order to create another. I would imagine, you know, and you do have to go there and question society, question mm-hmm. everything you're doing to see if it makes sense, if it can touch, you know, another human being. Mm-hmm. I think is the value of a story, if it can touch another human being. Yes. If it can achieve that, I think as a writer, you should feel accomplished that mm-hmm. other humans can read this and feel something, not necessarily just be focused on what's going on in the story, but then they become part of the story. They're one now with the character. They feel something for this character, and if they happen to pass away, any character, they may shed a tear. They may be upset. You know, we're all thankful Harry Potter is alive in the Harry Potter universe, you know, that mm-hmm. he didn't die in the end.
Mm-hmm. And oh, that brings on a whole other sub fan fiction kind of thing. Would you appreciate that if you had a group of people who read your books and see the conclusion and then create other stories off of that? You know, like the
oh, definitely.
You would like that?
Definitely.
Some writers don't write like that for some reason. They think that it changes the whole essence of the message or the story that they wanted to bring.
Of course. And I spent a long time protecting my own work. You know, authors, you obviously feel very close to it, but eventually you have to let it go. It's like a child, it's like a baby. That you've nurtured for a long time, and eventually you'll have to let it out into the world and let it have its own life. And if you look at any great story, any great narrative, fans are the lifeblood of it. Football, for instance, you know, what is football without fans? It's a very echoey stadium.
Well, President Donald Trump is going to be finding out this year what football is without fans if he continues the way he's going. We've got some questions and calls coming in for you as well. Going to take a short break. And when we come back, we will, you know, continue to talk to Mr. Wendt here on Freedom 106.5 FM Inside the Book Club. Stay tuned.
Good health can't wait. At RD Good Health Medical Center, get advanced CT scans starting at just $1,000 and coronary angiograms for only $5,000. Visit them at 34B Southern Main Road, Montrose, Chaguanas, or call 233-3730 or WhatsApp 725-GOOD today.
Welcome back, TNT. Let's head straight to the telephone lines. Hello, good morning. Hello, good morning.
Hello, morning, Tascar. How are you doing?
I'm good. I know you have some complicated question because science fiction is your space. His name is Isa Wendt.
Pleased to meet you, bro. Pleased to meet you, fellow Jedi.
He's calling you a Jedi.
Never calm down here, Mr. Wendt. So when I was small, right, I listened to your conversation. So when I was young, right, it had a time that the moon literally terrified the living daylight out of me. So hear me now. And I used to react to my friends on that. Why that's not spinning? What are doing there? What is that? Well, why that? And at time I asked my grandmother, Granny, why the moon don't spin? I was real small. And she said, don't question God. Well, I get to find out what it is. It's an artificial biosphere. You know, it is written, it is spoken. It was built by the Andromeda and Shiva progeny. Bro, he has a book you're advertising here right now, you're promoting or anything?
It is a book that he has written, and of course, at the end of the interview, we will give you how to purchase, where to find it, if it's online, and all of that. You see how you're stimulating thought, Mr. Wendt?
The moon is a very big part of the book. I obviously cannot spoil it for readers.
There we go.
Definitely, I'm enjoying the amount of, you know, spans it has into the other book. So there is more than one book, and in the second book, a lot of the moon and the destruction of the second moon will play a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets quite epic, and I cannot go into the details because they're fleshing out. They're being crafted, edited, and, you know, they're quite amazing.
So it's
pieces of written work.
So you have a second book coming out. The Valadaya is the first one.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And it's
it's 20 years writing, and not just world building, right?
Well, all right. So then 20 years of being a writer, yes?
Without publishing, yes, but continuously writing the book.
Mm-hmm.
And the storyline. So there is probably, I would say, three books there to be edited, yes.
Oh, so I'm now understanding. One finished, published, and then others in manuscript form, just waiting for, you know, the flushing out and editing to come down to be printed. Well,
which is quite an extensive process, yes. But there is what we will call a companion manual for now, scheduled to come out this year, so readers can also look out for that, and that will be, you know, in the editing process.
Oh,
what is the
name? Spiderwick is the name of the book and the story that I remember that had a field manual as well, where you go out and you make notes on what you see. Yes. Oh, this is a very inclusive, experience driven book. So do they get
very
to
much so.
Collect like is it as intensive as collecting samples and long time they used to do the specimen books where you stick stuff in it. Is it like that?
I don't want to spoil my ideas or ruin anything I have planned right now, but I do have some things planned for readers to explore locations. Mm-hmm. I have dropped some clues, but I am talking with marketing mm-hmm. teams, you know, to execute it properly, that it does reach enough people, and I would love to extend that to Trinidad, of course, and hide things or
a treasure hunt. Oh, it's been a while since I've heard of a thing like that, doing treasure hunts, mm-hmm. you know, a really submersive experience. Oh, this is a lot
very
of potential. So, you're saying
I
currently...
I want to begin with the reader.
Sorry about that. Could you repeat that?
Sure. I'm beginning with the reader, right? The mm-hmm. reader, to me, their experience in reading and immersive reading is my goal to achieve that. Let them find something that they did not have before.
Mm-hmm. So you are, I've seen this developing, the Field Manual, a companion book that's scheduled for this year to release. And then supplementary work will provide readers with deeper insight into Valadaya, lore, and world building. So it's preparation to build the world. That's basically how it is, to really understand the different... I guess, cultures and practices of the Valadaya and actually create that space. Interesting. Now, if it is you wanted to be something else than a writer, what would it be?
What would I couldn't really say. I would have to say already I do coaching.
Mm-hmm.
So coaching kids would be it. And if, you know, writing was to stay on the side, it would always be coaching for me and teaching children
mm-hmm.
My way of football, which is a less violent way, because I grew up obviously playing football in an aggressive manner and learned how to handle that on the field,
mm-hmm.
right? And, you know, I love Trinidad in football as well. Congrats again to the World Cup. That's brilliant. You know, that's what Barbados needs to do. And I will continue that vision, I think, regardless of the success envisioned and either realized for the ball there. That football will be a vision of mine to continue to get children out into the world playing higher level football than I was able to achieve.
So, well, I did see that you are a coach, so you like football and you like teaching the smaller children to play football.
Yes.
You are...
I'm a licensed coach, yes.
Oh, you're a licensed coach. So how has football in the Caribbean for you developed? You think we could really continue getting into the World Cup? I see that Curaçao has gotten into the World Cup for the first time. And you say that you're hoping that Barbados does the same. What does Barbados need to get into the World Cup?
I would say more international players, right? The more players that are playing internationally, the more international your team at home can be. That's basically it. And international coaches, people that know how to compete at an international level. I think across the Caribbean, we do need to... up our level to the whatever international is doing as much as possible, obviously, to meet them on an equal playing field. Everybody says, oh, New York Times bestseller, why not Caribbean Times bestseller, right? We need to look at ourselves just as equal as the rest of the world, or they won't look at us as equals.
Yeah,
they would always look at us as lesser than.
Oh, always trying a thing.
Or trying a thing, or... you know, not necessarily hitting the bar, whichever, not winning the World Cup. Perhaps if we were the West Indian football team, we'd win it.
I don't want to get upset, but we can't even function as West Indies cricket team, far less for football. let's stay with one headache.
yes, the ball there does deal with the the unity and how to do that, and the technologies necessary to do it. The conversation is open, and I'm very willing to dive into what is fiction from reality and what we can glean from fiction and what we can, you know, bring into our realities. I think is very important right now, especially obviously tomorrow is election day in Barbados. And Mia Motley is going for her third term. Her slogan is a changing world, right? Strong leadership for a changing world. And that is a very, very, very honest statement, I think, on her part, that, hey, the world is changing. We need strong leadership. We need strong minds. We need strong opinions. And everybody has to have something to say now. Social media, the smallest voice can have power now. You know, you just need to, you know, have something rational to say and something that people can actually grab onto and say, well, hey, you know, if we did this, it could actually work. You know, if we use this technology, it could actually work, you know. And that's what I did with the Valdez. I tried to use as much technology and science and put it into the world that it would create, at least for them, a better world, you know.
And on a side note,
it is a fantasy novel, and it must have antagonists, right?
Yeah, I mean the protagonist and the antagonist. How did you develop that world? I mean, before I ask you that question, as a writer, how does the election look to you? Is it that the people would welcome back Miss Mia Motley, or
I think Mia,
because
Motley,
the trend so far seems that there have been other countries to change the leaders. Do you think that would be the trend for Barbados?
I think in time, perhaps leadership will change for sure at the top. But for now, in Barbados, at least from my opinion, Mia Motley would be the strongest candidate until there is a stronger candidate and stronger opposition. I think gaining seats in the parliament and having a better opposition balance in the country would be the more healthy way forward for the country.
So now, as we just talked about protagonists, now the antagonists. How did you develop that world? Because I remember earlier on in the conversation, you did say about having the energy to meet that type of space or that energy. The protagonist has to have that to interact or I don't even to defend against the protagonist.
To defend, yes.
So
yes,
how
to have
how,
something to defend.
Is it that the protagonist, not to give away too much on the book, is it that the protagonist is totally, like, diabolical? Or is it took a lot to, like, he probably was a good person and then changed into something? Because I'm thinking, same Wakanda story.
Oh, yes. I love it.
Killmonger.
you have that creative mind where you can put the two, and the middle together, the beginning, the end, and the middle. And that's kind of what you have. Too, and I can see why you're so interested in that. Sure, of course, the idea is that the antagonist didn't start out evil, but he did grow there. And I can't say obviously, but the Valdir are powerful, right? And power does corrupt, you know. When you start to have multiple, you know, influence on things, things can become corrupted. People, and they're human beings, you know, so they're not perfect. And so decisions that they may make, the Valdir Senate, the Valdir governments, the armies, they're not perfect decisions. They did, you know, go through a lot of what you would say traumatic experiences with dragon wars and nutrition wars. So there's a deep, rich history to where you start off, right? And through changing people's permissions and ability to express themselves, you know, or live any way that they want, will, I think, reap negative results. And that is the consequence of power and stopping one from doing something they believe in, whether you think it's right or wrong, you will create Kind of friction. They create friction with what they allow, what they do not allow, what they're doing, how they operate in the world, the control they have over the world. And so they do create enemies, albeit they are silent and very coordinated right now, more if you would, subterfuge is the word to use. These kind of not open war, if you would, guerrilla warfare, anything.
Cold war.
Because the Valdar, yeah. They're quite powerful and not easy to you know, defeat. The energy stream is quite powerful and it gives them quite the advantage. So the antagonist does have to get quite imaginative in how he does approach the conflict that he's about to create. And I don't want to go too much into the details.
I mean, it's enthralling already. And for our caller who was very interested in before, I want to find out where your book is. How do we get a copy of it? And would there be physical copies in Trinidad anytime soon?
This is the major challenge in the Caribbean again. Caribbean authors are self-published or are, you know, having to go directly to China and to print. I actually heard a bird tell me that Trinidad has their own printing place happening and they can print books there. Charterhouse Books in Barbados is a very good company that helps out. That is the only name I can call right now, but obviously getting copies in every country around the world would be the goal, starting with Barbados, Trinidad, and the rest of the Caribbean. And of course, America, wherever, is the goal for, I think, any author to get their book worldwide and in readers' hands. And that is the goal, yes, of course.
Well, the thing is, the next question would have been, what is in your future as a writer? From what I've gathered so far, 20 years writing these, I believe it's 3 books altogether. I would think you want to take a little rest and probably start all over again for a fourth book?
Well, there are other projects I was talking to my editor about. I don't want to say too much about them, but I can say that the Dragon Wars is something that people are telling me that I need to write. The history of the Valadair is very rich and compelling, and it could be fleshed out. I am in the work of a very secret.
Don't give it out.
So there are. It will be a continuous rolling out for me. So long as I draw breath, I think I will continue to flesh out the Valadair story and the side stories that it can have, including the history. Collaboration is something that is necessary, I think, in order to grow. If you want to go quickly, you go alone. If you want to go far, you go together, right?
Correct.
And I think that is my ethos right now, is to go together on things that I would not necessarily do alone. So art books, you know, obviously the companion manual. So like, you know, graphic novel renditions of the book. These are all ideas that I would love to see come to fruition. And if Valdar ever comes to a point where I go on to another project, I do have quite a few stories, especially I would say Noah, the biblical flood story. I would love to explore that as a sci-fi novel. Yes.
But look how, I started to see images already on how the design would look, and probably it would be let me not give you all those ideas, but it's fascinating. It's fascinating still.
I know we could talk for hours about it, and my editor, obviously, you know, he reins me in on how much I can put out there and overwhelm readers, right? So it is quite a bit of work, and it will be rolling out, and I'm quite excited just to share with the world, especially with my homeland Trinidad, which I think is very serendipitous that it would be my first interview is in my
in Trinidad and Tobago. And I'm so glad that you chose Freedom 106.5 FM to do it as well.
I love the name.
Yeah. So here's what, when the other book is finally rolled out, so that you, when you come to do your launch and so on, we will be there and I can get an autographed copy, so I can say when I see the movie, I said I interviewed this writer, if you know how the, you know, I know about the series from the beginning. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability, the all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.